Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to episode 73 of Absolutely Intercultural. In our show today, we look at Gerd Hofstede's statement of culture as the software of the mind. And we will try to explore that metaphor to the extreme. We will be asking ourselves how we get to learn about a piece of new software and whether this experience can really be transferred to learning about a new culture. What, for example, can be done in the classroom to raise the intercultural awareness of students who prepare for their stays abroad? In our first category, Absolutely Programmed, Carsten explains how parents and school have a lot of influence on the way we learn culture, but also that increasingly radio, television and the internet take over that role as active educators or programmers.
I think we are being programmed kind of in the same way as software is being programmed. And Berit, I agree that you said parents and school and your friends are very important. But I think nowadays the media is also very important. There's so much influence by the media that we are kind of sometimes really programmed.
In this context, Berit describes how at birth the baby only has the hardware that secures the minimal functions of a human being and that everything else is programmed by the parent's education and the baby's learning.
More like that the babies learn a lot. When they are born, they really have only the hardware. They know how to breathe, they know how to scream, but they don't know more. And it's then that they learn, okay, that person is my mom and that person looks after me. And it's like if someone is programming a computer, he says what the computer has to do and somehow the parents say what the children have to do.
In our category Absolutely Disturbing, Audrey shows us how we can detect cultural differences between ourselves and others and how each and every one of us needs to develop this intercultural awareness.
Talk about synergies. You have to be aware of it. Look at the differences in yourself and in the other person and learn from it and choose the best. Everyone is capable of doing it. It's just a question of if they want to do it.
But let us now start with today's show. Today's Boxing Day, and Anne was a little worried at the end of her last show whether I would be able to get out this show in time. But here it is, and I want to wish you all a peaceful and quiet end of the year, wherever you are in the world. So close to the end of the year, I thought it might be appropriate to look back and reflect a little. Some of you may have thought that culture as the software of the mind, the main idea of this show, may have been prompted by a Christmas present. A new computer, perhaps, with new programs such as Google Chrome or Vista that I'm now struggling with. Well, it is a good guess. But the topic was actually planned a little earlier. After one of my seminars, which is called Managing Cultural Diversity, at the beginning of December. As a kickoff to the seminar, I asked a very international group of students and lecturers which comparisons came to their minds when they wanted to describe the phenomenon culture. As examples, I quoted things like, culture is like a tree, and culture is like a bowl of salad. We were soon in the middle of a very interesting discussion about culture is like an onion, the vegetable. And the different layers that we can peel off an onion are like the stages we go through when we are arriving in a new country and getting to know a new culture, layer after layer. Now, many participants of the course could personally relate to this comparison because there were about 15 of them who were exchange students at our university. And even towards the end of their semesters, they were still struggling to get to grips with a new culture. It was pointed out that the outmost layer of an onion, which can be brown or red, will actually only be less than 1% of the whole mass of the onion. And yet, we talk about brown or red onions, happily disregarding the superficiality of these labels. The parallels to national stereotypes, where we often attribute qualities to all members of a nation on the basis of very external behavior of only some individuals, seemed striking. Now, one student stretched the metaphor to the extreme. She reported how she had tried to cut through to the middle of the new culture too quickly, as if she had been cutting through an onion. So instead of patiently peeling off layer after layer, day after day in the new culture, she tried to go right through to the middle as quickly as possible. Much like in the kitchen, cutting onions, this cultural experience made her cry too, and she learned to be a little more patient in familiarizing herself with a new culture. When I carried out the same exercise in Lebanon about 2 years ago, the students surprised me with metaphors that I would not have expected. One student said that culture is like a shadow. Its shape and dimensions depend on the person who produces the shadow, but it is also influenced by more general factors, like the position of the sun. And the shadow always stays with you. You can only leave it behind for a very short time by jumping up from the ground. But as soon as you land, it will be back with you. Another student took up this idea that you cannot get rid of your culture and said that culture is perhaps like a perfume. At the end of the day, you are convinced that the smell has gone, even if you closely sniff the part of the body that you sprayed it on in the morning. However, no matter how much you are convinced that it is completely gone, suddenly somebody may come up to you and say, "Gosh, I really like the perfume you are wearing." The student related this comparison to her aunt, who emigrated from Lebanon to the US 20 years ago and felt completely American, and indeed had a very good American accent. However, she still acknowledged that people born in the US could actually sniff her out in a conversation because she would not be familiar with some pop stars from the 80s or an advertisement that other US citizens would remember from their childhood and would quote so many years after. This topic of what is culture gave me the opportunity to get back to two old friends, Berit Wiebe and Carsten Knese, who some of the listeners may even remember from the beginnings of this podcast 3 years ago. I did a roundtable discussion with them where we tested Gerd Hofstede's statement about culture as the software of the mind, another comparison that seems to make a lot of sense. But does it really? What does it really mean if we take it seriously? What are the analogies between culture and software as we know it from our computers? So in the category absolutely programmed, we asked ourselves, where do we get our culture from? Do we get it from our parents, like a new version of Photoshop for Christmas, for example? Or do we get it from peers, like we would get a new software if we illegally shared a program with our friends? Or does this work like the spell check in Word, which learns from us and improves because of the way we use it and add new items to it? Believe it or not, we got so carried away that we were talking about operating systems of babies after a while. But before I give too much away, let us listen to Berit and Carsten, who are brainstorming where we actually get our culture from.
I think it's mostly about the parents and the school. So education is very important for the culture.
So it's actually some kind of teaching in a way that...
Yeah, I think so.
I agree. I think we are being programmed kind of in the same way as software is being programmed. And Berit, I agree that you said parents and school and your friends are very important. But I think nowadays the media is also very important. There's so much influence by the media that we are kind of sometimes really programmed.
Well, some people actually say that the television set has more influence on the, on the culture of the children.
I'm afraid that could be the case. If children are sitting in front of the TV for hours and hours, they are being programmed by the TV.
I think the media is also important, but I think also the school has a big influence because the children are there, and I think if the teachers are very good, they can influence them.
Have an influence on the children, yes. Also, well, the question is, do you think it is more like we are being taught, so as if we were buying a software, or are we, well, in a way, the engineers of our own software? Because, I mean, you could say, yes, the children go to school, they try out a piece of behavior in that school culture, and then from the reaction of the teachers, or maybe even the reactions of the other kids, learn?
I think both is true, because I think we actually learn a lot from our parents, from our friends, from school, just by looking at things, how things are done. But of course, you also learn a lot by trying things out, by trial and error.
Mm.
And if you do something that is really not acceptable in your culture, you will get a very clear reaction on that. And then you are very likely to learn out of that that you can't do that.
Yeah, so that would be trial and error. And here we would actually be the engineers of our, well, of our own. This is a little bit like a computer that learns, isn't it? Where the system, by trial and error, finds out what it should do and what it shouldn't do. But isn't there a whole lot of things which already comes kind of pre-installed? I would call that the operating system, where we do things, but even from birth. I mean, a child would come to this world and will scream.
I think to call it the operating system is too advanced. I think that's more the hardware control. You know, when you breathe, your instinct, that would be more the hardware control. It's like when you're buying a new computer that don't have any software on it and you switch it on. It lives, it is there, but it can't do anything.
All right.
So I think that's...
So you say the baby, well, what things are there? I can think of, for example, it will scream.
It screams, if it breathes, of course, and it reacts to the environment.
Batting the eyelids, sleeping and being awake, wanting to eat something and all that. You would say that's not even the operating system. You say that's even one step below.
Yeah, because that's there when it's being born. Right.
So what is the operating system in your thoughts?
Maybe it's more like that the babies learn a lot. When they are born, they really have only the hardware. They know how to breathe, they know how to scream, but they don't know more. And it's then that they learn, okay, that person is my mom and that person looks after me.
Okay.
And it's like if someone is programming a computer, he says what the computer has to do, and somehow the parents say what the children have to do.
I would say the operating system would be a basic set of rules that you need to actually broaden your horizon, maybe, or to actually learn more.
For example, the language we speak, is that something where you would say this is part of the operating system? Because that would be the same for me and for my neighbors. And
yeah, that's true, of course, because the first language you learn is usually the language of the culture you're living in. And of course, you need that to cooperate or to function within a culture. Yeah. And then when you learn another language, you broaden your compatibility somewhere, because then you can function in other cultures and in other
systems.
Countries.
Yeah. Oh, there was an interesting discussion on the seminar that we talked about. One student who is a child of migrants actually compared this to running two different operating systems at the same time. That girl was from Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that, in fact, she always has two systems running. This is like the set of rules that is acceptable at home is completely different from the one that she's using at the university.
It is possible with computers to have different operating systems. So there's another similarity I haven't thought about before.
Well, and also, of course, you may change from one to another. Like you get an update. For example, my father is still using Windows 98, which is perfect for him. And in the meantime, I have changed my operating system three times. I got updates, and I'm now completely incompatible with him, actually. So when I give him a file, sometimes he cannot even open it.
Yeah, but it's also that the culture can work with the differences, and it's the same with the computers. Even if you have a file that he can't open, you can turn it that he can open it.
Oh, yes. And sometimes, actually, this is also like in cultures, sometimes you need a third computer to do that job. Yeah. So you transfer your file to a different system, then you use, well, I don't know what you would call that, a converter program or something.
Something like that.
And then suddenly afterwards, this is a little bit like these cultural translators or cultural mediators that we sometimes need in business when we go to other countries to make.
Yeah. I sometimes feel that I'm at least partly incompatible with my grandparents, for example. Sometimes I really cannot explain what I'm doing or why I am doing something, or that I'm traveling a lot and what I'm doing here with my studies. And that became really hard to really explain to them what I'm doing.
Okay, so maybe you've done a couple of updates and they got left behind?
They have a different operating system. They have a different set of rules that they got used to.
Babies with pre-installed hardware controls and incompatibilities with our grandparents. What is happening here at the end of the year? I hope you have not renamed the category of this roundtable from absolutely programmed to absolutely mad. But I guess we would have to forgive you for that. However, as you will have noticed, the three of us found the parallels between software and culture so compelling that we could not stop. Try it out for yourself. if you stretch this metaphor, it becomes more and more productive, so I think we should come back to it in the future shows. There are at least two further aspects which seem to be worth another roundtable discussion on Hofstede's culture as the software of the mind. Number one would be collective cultural updates in our society, and who will get them and who won't. And number two, incompatibilities between cultures, what causes them and how can they be overcome by individuals. We would like to come back to these topics in our next shows and would love to include you, the listeners, in this discussion. Either you can send us your written statement by email or post it on our blog and we'll pick it up and discuss it. Or even better, you could send us an audio statement, which we can include in one of our next shows. If you want to join the discussion itself, we would also include you in a digital roundtable discussion in Skype. Let us know whether you are interested and we will make it happen for you. So if we speak about different softwares as the equivalent of different cultures, how can we prepare ourselves for working with these different programs or even mediating between persons whose communication seems incompatible? How can you teach the variety of cultures in the classroom? In our last category, absolutely disturbing, I speak to a truly intercultural person, Audrey Fernandez Deal, who was born in Malaysia, studied in Australia and New Zealand, lived in Switzerland for a while, and now teaches intercultural communication at university level in Germany. This means that Audrey has had to change the software in her mental hard disks many times to adapt to the new environments. She tells us about her concept of culture, whether she thinks culture can be taught or not, and about a very disturbing cultural game called Roofer Roofer. As Audrey teaches intercultural awareness, she says that her culture general training is both for foreign students who come to her university to study there, but also for her own students who prepare for going abroad.
We conduct an intercultural competence seminar every semester for our students because we believe that it's extremely important, not only for our guest students, but for our students who intend to go abroad.
Okay, so there are students from your university and there are also the incoming students who are studying in Germany.
That's right. We believe in mixing them.
Oh, right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's held in English?
Yes, it's always held in English.
All right, okay. Now, how can you, these are two very different target groups, I guess. How do you teach them both, the incoming students and the students who want to go out to different countries?
Why is it a different group?
Well, I just thought so. I don't know.
Well, cultural awareness is all about awareness, as I said, and it's awareness for another culture, another stereotype, and so on. So we'd like to build this awareness in all our students so that they can be prepared for the trip abroad.
Okay. What kinds of things do you do in the seminar? Is it a theoretical seminar?
No. We believe in practical role plays, exciting games, quizzes, shows.
Can you give us an example? What kinds of games do you do?
We do simulations. We do a simulation, for example, it's called Roofer Roofer. You may have heard of it.
Yeah, I have actually. Yes. But maybe for our listeners, maybe you can explain a little bit what it is.
We break the group into two groups and build up two separate cultures. Mm-hmm. And they role play their culture and the groups mix. And they have to guess what the culture and they have to try and join the culture there. Yeah. And it's really amazing. And then we discuss about the feeling.
And how are these two cultures different in the game?
Yes. One culture is a very quiet culture. We believe in customs, traditions,
right,
and personal relationships. And the other culture believes in finishing the game, getting the points, and they're only interested in you if you play the game. If you don't play the game, they're not interested. I'm sure that sounds very familiar to you.
Yes. Who are the ones who are usually very upset about the whole thing?
Both of them.
Both of
it's
them.
Amazing. They're both really upset with the other ones, and they come back with mixed feelings from that culture. It's amazing.
I've done that in the past, and I usually do a feedback session afterwards.
Yes.
What do students tell you in that feedback session?
They come up with the adjectives, strange, different, and they begin to realize what it's like when they go abroad, because they come and visit the other culture as well. Hurt, insulted.
Yeah.
And we work with these adjectives to build awareness.
All right, okay. Now, you've already given us an example of how you teach culture. Are you absolutely convinced that culture is something that can really be taught, or is that something where some people are good at adapting to a different culture and other people will find it difficult for their whole lives? What do you think?
Well,
how much is teachable?
I don't think you can teach culture, but you can teach awareness of culture. And I think it's up to the individual person. They have to be aware of it. We talk about synergies. Mm-hmm. You have to be aware of it. Look at the differences in yourself and in the other person. And learn from it and choose the best. Everyone is capable of doing it. It's just a question of if they want to do it. Okay. And when we talk about culture, we also have corporate culture, so it never stops.
Mm-hmm. Do you talk about culture mostly in national terms, like the culture of the USA and Germany? Or do you also talk about different kinds of culture, like Protestant, Catholic,
everything.
Male, female?
We talk about everything. We don't use, well, we had one section on stereotypes this time. It was really funny. But we went on to different types of stereotypes, gender stereotypes, age stereotypes,
right.
and so on. We cover everything from race, language, to corporate culture.
Okay. I sometimes realize that my students, because I also teach similar classes, that in the class they are aware that they should be careful and they are suspicious of what is happening and they pay attention. But I'm always a little worried that once out there in the real world they might forget these things. And what can we do to sort of make them remember these things when they're out there?
Personally, I don't believe we can do anything.
Okay.
We do these three-day seminars. It's three full days. You can't hide behind something for three full days. The first day, they pretend, they try. The second day, it comes through. And the third day, you see them as they are. And you'll find that they open up. And that's when they really learn, on the third day. And with this feeling, we hope that when they go abroad, they'll remember this feeling. And
okay.
that would guide them throughout their stay.
Okay, and then when they get into similar situations, they
then
suddenly
they
think, oops, I remember.
Told me something.
Okay.
I heard something about them.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you say if you're doing these weekend seminars, mm-hmm. 3 days weekend seminars, are you saying this is a better way to put people into the real situation
yes.
than it would be in a 2 hours a week
yes.
seminar?
Yes, I do. I really do. Because in 3 days, you're forced not only to hear, but to live it.
Right.
And so that's in a group, and the group mm-hmm. forms. The group grows together, and it's excellent.
All right.
And if you do it on a weekly basis, I do have courses like that. The result is not as intensive as a 3-day seminar.
It is interesting how Audrey seems to subject her students to a kind of artificial culture shock in her simulations and forces them to develop strategies how to survive in a cultural situation that is strange and disturbing to them. I know from her students that they really enjoy these 3-day seminars where their stereotypes and preconceptions are questioned all the time. In the feedback sessions, some of the students say that the simulations brought up some negative emotions that they had experienced on their first stays abroad. And some said, after their stays abroad, that luckily the foreign culture had not been quite as disturbing as the one they had experienced during these simulations. Now this brings us to the end of this show. Anne and I have enjoyed another year of being in intercultural contact with you, the listeners, through our show. We appreciate your responses. Please keep them coming. Now, if you have not made any New Year's resolutions yet, maybe you could share your thoughts about the shows a little more with the other listeners on our blog in the coming year. The address is absolutely-intercultural.com. This show has given Anne and me many opportunities for having conversations about culture with experts and ordinary people, which otherwise we would probably not have taken. So the two of us would also like to thank you, the listeners, for keeping us going and looking at intercultural issues from different angles on a fortnightly basis. Our first show in the new year will be coming to you from Anne Fox in Denmark on the 9th of January. Until then, bleiben Sie absolut interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.